following program is brought to you by Susty Party, an online party supply store for eco-friendly party products and biodegradable compostable tableware. For more information, visit sustyparty.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Many people in our food community have been seriously impacted by Superstorm Sandy, and our hearts go out to them. At HRN, we've been covering these stories since the storm hit. To learn more, visit our website at www.heritageradionetwork.org.
Good morning. This is Joe Campanelli. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. In the Drink is the show that brings you the very best of the wine, booze, spirits, beer, distilling, all of the delicious industries, the stuff that's being served in some of the best restaurants in New York, at your local wine shop. And I'm here to bring to you some of the personalities who will be talking about these great things to drink. Today we're going to have on a good friend of mine, Allison Patel. She has, it's kind of surprising to meet Allison for the first time. She's this young girl who has this extreme love and interest for all things whiskey. And it's not the kind of person who I think if you initially think of as a whiskey expert. You know, you think about a whiskey expert and maybe you think about an older guy with a red nose who's maybe a little bit larger and has like long-winded kind of stories. But not this cute, bubbly girl who is very smart and passionate about it, but also very approachable, and you actually want to hang out with her. I'm here with Allison. Her company is called Local Infusions, and we're also staring at a couple bottles of the Bren whiskey. Allison, welcome on the show.
Thank you. Thanks. I may not have the big pot belly, but I do have some long-winded stories. So. Okay.
Fair enough. So how did you get into it? How did you get started in whiskey?
I came at it as a consumer for sure, and it was a Yamazaki 18 by Suntory that really started me on my love for whiskey. I had it at a bar in New York called Vintry Wine and Whiskey, and I'll never forget it because I tried a lot of whiskey before that, and I just kind of wasn't there. And then I had a sip of that, and I was obsessed. I couldn't turn away.
So. What was it about Yamazaki? So it's a Japanese whiskey.
Japanese whiskey, yeah. It's by Suntory. If a lot of people saw the movie Lost in Translation, they were promoting Suntory. It was actually the Hibiki 17, which isn't available in this country. But anyhow, people most know Suntory, I think, from that movie. Yamazaki 18. It's not an inexpensive dram, unfortunately, but it's extremely smooth and complex, and I felt like, you know, as someone who I had been drinking a lot of wines, and my husband and I always kind of made a lot of our vacations around wineries and visiting winemakers and things like that, but I really struggle with wine to get into the nose and pick out all of these very distinctive flavors that so many people like yourself can quickly pick out. They're like, you know, barnyard and grapefruit peel, and I'm going, what? I just smell red wine. So whiskey for me was really the first time that I was able to find all of those notes that I'd been starting to understand with wine, and it was much more clear and apparent to me, and then I just geeked out from there. I love it.
I love that, you know, the first thing that we bring up though is this story about how you first tasted this spirit and you remember it. I think that a lot of great sommeliers, people who have the passion, were inspired by a certain wine experience and can always remember that wine experience. And I think that, you know, when you're a successful sommelier, you have that passion, and you're successful in the industry, you have that passion, and there are these formative moments. And to hear that your formative moment was at Vintry, which is such so cool, it's so close to us, and was with a Japanese whiskey of all things, I think is really, really interesting, and shows that you can pull that inspiration from so many different places. So with your company, Local Infusions, I was asking you about, because the name I think is can be confusing because yes. you only have whiskey and no infusions. Are there infused whiskeys?
No, there are infused whiskeys, but that's not something that I focus on. My whole idea, it's funny because I fell in love with a Japanese whiskey, right? Which is what the industry kind of calls a world whiskey and what I consider a non-traditional, whiskey producing country. Obviously the traditional ones being Scotland, Ireland, and Canada, and of course America. And I really started to, I think with that first sip of the Yamazaki, that I really started to understand that there's a whole world of, producers out there that aren't from those four main countries, and that got me really excited, and I wanted to explore that. And I was an artist before in a former life, so I like to I really wanted to focus on the craftsmanship of it. So the idea of local infusions, I set it up to import and export whiskeys, and my import side was to import whiskeys from non-traditional countries, and then the export side was American craft whiskeys. And so the infusion, I was thinking of infusing local and international cultures with these kind of craft products, but the name I think was a fail.
The name was maybe a fail, but the whiskeys are fantastic. I mean, I think we met because of our shared love of Balcones.
Yes,
the great Texan distiller with the head distiller Chip Tate. I'd love to have him on this show. By the way,
we'll get him here.
Please let's get him here. Yes, I think he'd be fantastic. Probably the geekiest distiller that I've ever met, doing things like aging his own wood, but like bringing it up to like northern United States so that it has, that it has that winter of aging, and just really interesting stuff, and making these Texan blue corn whiskeys.
Incredible.
How did you and Chip ever end up meeting?
I like to say that I stalked him. Before he was even in the New York market, I try and read as much as I can about whiskey, and I had started to hear Balcones' name being mentioned in certain circles. So I said, I honed in on him, and the more I read and understood what he was doing, like what you brought up, I mean, his whiskeys are just so incredibly complex, and what I really admire is that he's bringing innovation into this industry, and he's not bringing innovation to try and cheat or bring a whiskey to market faster. What I consider cheating. He's not taking steps to try and just get more bang for his buck and stretch, I guess make a bigger profit. He's really bringing innovation, I feel, to actually see what else we can do within the confines of making whiskey. And he's producing some incredible spirits. And so I really stalked him for a long time. I kept saying, "You have to work with me. You have to work with me." so we set up a partnership where I got to represent him abroad in other markets, and we were just launched. He just launched in London, and we're launching in Norway and Sweden very soon. So it's all very good. It's all very exciting.
That's exciting. How have you found the reception in the market? Are people like, Texan whiskey, what's that about? Are they into it?
I thought there was going to be some more pushback. I mean, there is initially, I think, the idea. It's like whiskeys, from all these different places that struggle to kind of break that little barrier. But when you have something like Balcones that is so complex and beautiful and complete in the glass, you drink it, and from the nose, from the first, time you smell it all the way through to the finish, it's one, almost like a song. It just each part of the experience flows into the next. There's no kind of disconnected part of the experience. That I think once you taste it, then all of those misconceptions go right out the window, and you're like, cool, whiskey from Texas, I like it, let's do it.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about some of your other products, what else you're working
with. Bren is a whiskey that I produce in Cognac, France, and that was really my big the one that I was kind of working on quite secretly for a long time, because I was afraid that if someone had heard what I was doing, that maybe the big boys could sweep in with who have obviously a lot more money than I do and take it out from under me. But I launched it October 1. I've been bootstrapping this whole thing, and I've worked really closely with the distiller in Cognac, France, to try and bring this product to market. And I, Chip and I talk a lot, Chip from Balcones, because what I think he's doing and I am doing are parallel. They're not competitive, but we're trying to bring and showcase these new profiles of whiskey to the market. I always say you can't lead by following. So why try and hit the market with something that you can, that parallels so closely with something else? You can already buy that something else. So, you know, it's scary to launch something that is a new profile to a category, but I think at the same time, very exciting and hopefully rewarding to the consumers.
And so just to be clear, so this brand is whiskey that's made within the Cognac region of France.
Yes. And it is a single malt. It's 100% malted barley. There's no cognac in it, but we finish the whiskey in cognac barrels. And we apply a lot of the cognac production methods to making a single malt whiskey, which kind of produces a much more fruit forward and kind of complex sugared tasting whiskey.
And where is the malt grown?
Actually, at the distillery.
Really?
Yeah, which makes me really excited, and again, the geeky side of me comes out. Yeah. Because a lot of single malts around the world are importing their barley from Scotland. So we're starting with already an entirely different base. We grow two varietals of barley right there next to my producer's vineyard. So he still makes cognac. And so the barley's growing next to the grapes, and they're taking advantage of that really beautiful chalk-rich soil. And we're, and then we go from there.
Well, you can find Bren right now at restaurants such as Dell'Anima,
yes,
and Fora, the wine bar, and also the just new to open up La Picha restaurant in the East
Yay!
Village.
Yeah,
so
honored to be there.
I really do love this product. I think it's really interesting. But I see a couple of glasses and they're empty, and I see bottles of Bren and there's liquid in the bottle. So I think we should taste it. Can you talk, while we're pouring this out, can you talk to us about this glass? This is a really unique glass that I'm looking at right
now. Yeah, this is a Glencairn glass. It's made by a Scottish family, and what I like about it is the nose, the top of the glass is quite small. This is not television, so if you can imagine a little bit bigger than a silver dollar, and perhaps maybe an inch and a half in diameter across, and then from the top of that glass, it kind of goes down, and then it bellows out a little bit. So there's almost like almost kind of looks like a Christmas ornament if you hang it upside down. And what this allows is the widest part is kind of where your whiskey is, and then you've got this very focused nose as the glass kind of comes up and more together at the top, and it just allows you to really understand all that's going on in the glass. I think if you get a glass, like a typical rocks glass that is very wide, you don't get to smell and understand all of the aromas that are going on inside the whiskey. I mean, you can get some of it, but it's
kind of the ideal glass.
Yeah,
similar in a way to if you could picture a grappa. Tulip,
exactly,
but a little bit larger and without a stem. And the idea with a grappa tulip, and I wonder if it's the case with this. I guess not, because I see you swirling it. So usually I don't swirl the grappa in the tulip because of the way that it's shaped, it does kind of capture all those aromatics, and you don't need to. This is a little bit wider, so maybe that's all right. I find that if I swirl grappa, it's kind of an instinct, because I swirl wine often that it can be annoying to friends and antisocial behavior that I'm like swirling water at the table.
I do that too.
I swirl water too. But with grappa, the high alcohol spirit, I find sometimes when you swirl something that's very high alcohol, you just start vaporizing the alcohol, and you probably know more about this than I do.
I don't know. I think that's interesting.
But how do you go about tasting whiskey?
Well, if you have a glass like this, especially these Glencairn glasses are given out at a lot of the bigger whiskey festivals also. And the important thing to remember is when you kind of regardless of what glass you're nosing whiskey in, if you have a lot of different types of whiskey in it, so if you're, you know, if you drink this, you dump it out and you try something else. A lot of people do what they kind of call palming. So you put your palm over the top of the glass and you shake it once, and you'll feel the whiskey go on top of your hand. And this is not scientific at all. It's really just to coat your entire glass on the inside with your whiskey. So then you get a much more pure nose of the spirit that you're smelling. And, you know, I mean, look, the only wrong way to drink whiskey, I say, is to not drink it at all. So everyone has their own way. You know, people like to debate if it's, you know, on the rocks or with water or neat or whatever, or, you know, in a cocktail. I say if you enjoy it with water, if you enjoy it on the rocks, that's a great way to have it. Personally, and in the industry, I need to try everything neat, and I prefer a Glencairn glass so I can understand everything that's going on in the glass. I look at the color first. It's very similar to wine. You look at the color, you nose it, you smell it. I try and nose it from a couple different points of the glass, almost like making a cross, like go at the top, go at the bottom, go at the two sides, because I do find that the aromas do vary. And I also like to start with the glass probably about 5 or 6 inches from my nose and then go in as you get closer, because the alcohol, like you were saying, the alcohol vapors, you are going to get something different. You're going to get very, like the lighter, the floral notes, you know, farther away from the glass. And then as you go in, you get more alcohol. And then you drink it.
This is probably the most fruit-forward whiskey I've ever tasted.
I agree.
It's really aromatic and fruit-forward, and it's not as woody and grainy, if that's a word. Is that from the terroir of cognac? It's just so used to making fruit that...
I think I like that idea. Absolutely. Our production methods also, as I kind of alluded to, you know, we're growing the whiskey, the barley ourselves. We're growing the whiskey. We're growing the barley ourselves. We're doing a slightly colder fermentation style, which yields kind of a deeper extraction of the actual grain notes. And then we're distilling it in an alembic still, where whiskey is typically distilled in either a pot or a column still, most likely pot still. And so an alembic still is a still that they use to distill cognac from. And the shape of it is such that it allows you to catch more of the fruit tasting molecules, the ester profiles. So our new make, which is the whiskey that just comes off the still, it's clear, it hasn't gone into the barrel yet, is still even much more fruit forward than a lot of new make I've tried. Mm. And then we're starting this in new French Limousin oak, which you'll know from the wine industry is a pretty nice oak.
Sorry, fancy oak barrel. Very expensive fancy oak barrels.
Very
All
expensive.
Right, so we'll be back in just a few. We have another Bren whiskey to taste, but first we're going to take a short break.
Thanks.
I was hoping
You're listening to All the Time by Controller on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Dubois.
And I'm Jessica Holsey.
We are the entrepreneurs behind Susty Party. Susty Party creates responsibly made, eco-friendly party supplies and compostable tableware. Parties and events generate the second largest amount of waste in the USA, just behind the construction industry. Susty Party products make parties more sustainable and sustainability a little more fun.
Susty Party plates, bowls, and straws are available in Whole Foods retail stores and also at sustyparty.com. We offer a curated selection of other Susty-approved party supplies. We also have a commercial division, Sustyware, that sells compostable tableware in bulk to businesses and food service industry establishments.
Susty Party is a certified youth trade company and B Corporation. Our social, economic, environmental, and even spiritual values drive Susty Party to live our motto,
Respect Earth and Party On.
All right, and we are back at heritageradionetwork.org. You're listening to In the Drink. I'm here with Allison Patel from Bren, who when we were listening to the commercial, she's like, I know those girls. I know Susty Party. Susty Party's awesome. So
shout out to them.
Shout out to Susty Party. Also, I just want to make a quick announcement. Heritage Radio Network has been just fantastic about covering all of the damage and destruction from Superstorm Sandy. It's affected so many people. Just for a personal note, this Saturday I'm going to be out in the Rockaways. Rockaway was hit really hard, the beach out there, and I feel like it's a place that didn't get a ton of media coverage. Maybe a little bit more now recently, but a few friends of mine have set up a food truck out there to serve hot meals to the people who are helping out with the recovery and people who are still trying to live out there and rebuild their lives. And it's going to be going on for the next 2 months. We'll be out there this Saturday and then every Tuesday going forward, a crew from Del Anima Restaurant. There's a bunch of restaurants involved. The guys from the Breslin have really taken the lead. They've donated a ton of stuff. And the Spotted Pig and Fat Radish, Sam Talbot put the menu together. So if anyone is interested in helping out and donating, hit me up at Joe Campanelli on Twitter or joecampanelli@gmail.com. I'll send you more information. But it's a great thing, and they need a lot of help out there. Also, I did want to give you guys a heads up. If you want to call in and ask Allison any questions about whiskey in general, about Bren specifically, or any of her spirits, the call-in number here is 718-497-2128. You'll talk to Jack, our producer, and hopefully we'll have some questions from you. Anyway, so we're looking at another bottle of the Bren whiskey. It's much darker. I noticed that right away. But what else is going on here?
Well, what I do with Bren is you'll notice on the front there's no age statement. So a lot of whiskeys will say, you know, they're 5 years, they're 12 years, they're 18 or whatever. I don't blend any of the barrels throughout the process. So I'm not making big batches and then dumping them into the barrels. I'm doing single barrel releases. So it goes from the new French Limousin oak into a used cognac barrel, and then from that barrel we proof it down to 40% ABV and then put it in the bottle. Thank you. And so the barrel number is stamped on the back of each bottle. And so what you're going to find is that as you see more barrel numbers hit the market, there's going to be a difference in color and very slight differences in flavor and in nosing and things like that. You know, I think for me the reason I made that choice was it kind of showcases the artistry of what we're doing. I mean, my distiller is a third generation cognac producer. His family's been making cognac since the 1920s, and I just really wanted to showcase what his abilities are with the aging process, and I think it's kind of cool to see, like, even just the difference in color.
Why is there such a difference in color? You said these are aged for the same amount of time.
Yep.
Same base spirit.
Yep.
You're adding additional coloring to it.
No.
This is brown number 32.
No. After it sits in the new French oak for a minimum of 5 years, then it goes into a barrel that had cognac in it previously. So what we call used cognac barrels. And this is pretty popular in Scotch whiskey. They're not using cognac. They're using a lot of port or sherry finish. They're calling it, you know, their whiskey has sherry finish. Like Macallan, I think, is actually, some of their expressions are only aged in whiskeys, in barrels that had sherry in it before. So it is a common practice to use a barrel that had another spirit in it before, like ex-bourbon barrels are all used in Scotch. But we thought it would be kind of cool, since he has all these cognac barrels sitting around, to try and use some of these cognac barrels. And then the color differences and the slight flavor differences are coming from, you know, each cognac barrel, if you've had cognac in there that was maybe, you know, a 20-year-old cognac versus a 2-year-old cognac, that extraction level is going to be quite different. So that's really where the differences are coming from, is that final barrel.
And is this really as strong as any other whiskey? Because this feels, this goes down a little too easy. Should call it scary whiskey. It's very smooth.
Thanks. Thank you. It is. Yeah, a lot. Most whiskeys are bottled at 40% ABV, which is 80 proof. There are definitely some on the market that are higher. I would say, you know, most are between 40 and 43%. But yeah, this is at 40%, which is 80 proof. And thanks. That was one of the goals, was to get something that was very approachable and very smooth and something that didn't offend people right up front.
Yeah. So who has a great whiskey program? If you're in New York City, any of the boroughs, Northeastern
bars area, or stores?
Well, let's talk about both. Why not? Where do you buy your whiskey? At stores?
I like a couple of places. I mean, Park Avenue Liquor, which is not on Park Avenue. It's on Madison. Go figure. They're a phenomenal account. They really know what they're doing, and they have a lot there, and they have a lot there that's not on the shelf. So if you're looking for something specific, mm-hmm. don't be afraid to ask. They're wonderful. Ledoux Wines, which is down in the West Village.
Yeah.
They're really building a beautiful whiskey program there. I'm excited for what they're doing. Who else in stores? I mean, there's just so many. You can find some really great whiskey stores kind of tucked all over. Bottle Rockets has a lot of good stuff.
And then where would you go to drink whiskey?
Well, Delanima, of course. there's Brandy Library is a staple. You've got Vintry Wine and Whiskey, but there Vintry Wine and Whiskey, I think, is more Scotch and not necessarily kind of all the whiskeys. The Flatiron Room just opened up within a month, and they're amazing. They're on 26th Street and between 6th and Broadway. I'll actually be there tonight pouring Bren for free from 6 to 8.
Free Bren. The Flatiron Room.
Yeah. There's so many great whiskey bars popping up. You've got Norman's Kill in Brooklyn. You've got Char Number 4 in Brooklyn. Just people who are really getting quite passionate about the spirit and taking the time to learn about it and educating themselves as much as they're trying to educate everyone else.
And who's doing very exciting things in terms of production? Are there new distillers out there that you're really excited about?
Whiskey's funny because it has to age for so long. So it's when you're new, you know, Bren is at least a 7-year-old whiskey and I'm new. it's funny. It's like, what were you doing 7 years ago when this was being made? Balcones is certainly, I think, one of my number ones. I think innovative wise and his, what he's producing, what Chip Tate is producing is just extraordinary. Brooke Lottie is from Scotland, is another favorite of a lot of people. Also a great innovator. Compass Box too, from Scotland. They're blends. They don't produce, they buy barrels. And John Glazer has a really incredible palette and is doing some really interesting blends that I think are worth checking out.
Compass Box. We've had the Peat Monster.
Oh, awesome. Totally different than Bren, but I love it.
Completely different. intense and not as much fruit, but an awesome whiskey in and of itself.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Wow. You just made me feel a little bit better about myself because we have all of those at our restaurants. So maybe I do know something about whiskey.
I
didn't think that this is my forte, my area forte, but Brooke Lottie did that really cool Italian series that I was super into, and they have an organic line, and they have a line of like heirloom grains, and I think Brooke Lottie is
pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff.
I do too.
So we usually play this little game about with wine people. We give them different scenarios and say, what wine would you drink in the following situation? I've seen you drink whiskey with bolognese and with chicken and with crudo. So I just want to get a few food pairings for you.
Interesting. From you. Like it.
Which whiskey in the world would you pair? We're here at Roberta's. I always like to ask what would you drink? Is there a whiskey that you would ever drink with pizza?
Always. Definitely.
Always. Okay.
I would go with pizza. I would go probably with, of course it depends on what kind of pizza. Is it like a sweeter pizza, or do you have some hot sopressata on it, or which way are you going?
All right. Well, I like the classic little margarita.
Perfect.
Fresh mozzarella, good basil. Sauce.
I would probably go with a good Speyside Scotch. Because Speyside typically has a little, they have a lot of sherry finishes on their whiskey. They're not a peated whiskey, so they're going to be a little bit smoother and lighter, but they still have enough heft that they can hold up to the cheese and the sauce. So right. Something like a Balvenie would be okay. Balvenie.
You mentioned one of my favorite places, Char Number 4. They have this incredible pulled pork delicious sandwich. It's just amazing.
Yes.
What would you do with a pulled pork sandwich at Char Number 4?
I think you have to go bourbon.
Yeah.
I think you have to go a good classic, classic heavyweight bourbon. Something that has a lot of like viscosity and oils to it too. Not something too light. Balcones. I would go with Balcones True Blue. Yeah.
All right. And then one last one. I love sushi so much. There's a place opened up in my neighborhood called Netta, N-E-T-A, and I think it is the best sushi south of Yasuda. It's just incredible. And they have one of the things that you don't find at other sushi restaurants is that they have just a fantastic beverage program with great wines, great whiskeys, and a bartender there who knows what the hell he's doing, which is really awesome. And one of my favorite drinks there is actually a take on a Manhattan. And I'm always conflicted because they have really incredible cocktails that pair well with the sushi with bonito flakes and mushroom. But if you're going to have sushi dinner, this seems like complete, like just don't drink whiskey with sushi. Am I wrong?
No, you're totally wrong. Must drink whiskey.
Okay.
With sushi.
What whiskey would you have with sushi?
Well, you got to go Japanese. Because Japanese have they've taken the Scotch idea and they've made it lighter, and the reason they did that is because they like to drink it with food. So all those yakitori dishes, they go great. I would go with a classic basic Yamazaki 12-year.
Yamazaki 12-year.
And always finish with Bren with dessert.
All right. Thank you, Allison Patel.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Really, please do check it out. Balcones Distillery down in Texas. Those are incredible. And then, Bren, check out Allison tonight at Flatiron, 6 to 8 o'clock. And we'll talk to you next week on In the Drink.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Who are you harassing with?